Hey everybody, this is Justin Case. This is Pod Rock episode 12, and with me tonight I have my partner in crime, if you will, Mr. Ben Stape.
But we'll go with crime.
Okay.
I've got nothing. Yeah, how you doing?
I did that because you're a fan of Queensryche. You know, mind crime, get it? You know,
I get it.
That was a loose connection. That was a loose connection. We lost the ground on that one, and it's all my fault. Anyway.
No do-overs. Sorry, no do-overs.
We're live, pal. You can't change that. So what I'll do is we'll do our typical. I want to let you roll off with the news in a second after I finish our intro here. And it's good to be back, everybody. And both Ben and I have been, you know, following kind of in the footsteps of Uncle Traveling Matt, if for any of those people out there who are familiar with the Fraggle Rock series. Anyway, that just means that we've been around a while. I'm making that reference. Anyway, we've been out and about ourselves. We spent a little bit. I did post an episode recently here a few weeks ago. That one was kind of had some hair on it. But anyway, we're back, folks, and we're here to talk about all things music and what we've been seeing lately and what we, you know, as we evolve as hosts musically, we like to share that as well. And we're glad to be able to have some time tonight. So Ben, you got some news there?
Well, I think we both do. The first one, yep, I'll kind of start off with, I don't know if you'd heard, you probably did since you've been kind of keeping up on some of the news lately. There's a super group that got formed with Kim Thiel from, I probably butchered his last name like I butcher everybody's last name.
I think you said it right.
Yeah. A guy from Soundgarden, guitarist, Chris Novoselic from the bassist from Nirvana, drummer Matt Cameron from Pearl Jam, and also I think he was with Soundgarden. And they've got two female vocalists. They created a super group and they have an LP that's out. I haven't had a chance to really dive into it too much. I've heard a couple snippets here and there. You can definitely tell the guitarist is Soundgarden. Just because of his flavor and his play style, which
drop D.
Yeah. But, you know, the wah in certain places, the feel of it, his style, I always thought was very unique, especially for the, the alternative music that was coming out of Seattle at the time. You had your Nirvanas, you had your Pearl Jams, you had Alice in Chains. And Nirvana definitely had their own distinct sound, not only from, you know, their singer Chris Cornell, but I thought their guitar player, Kim, was definitely, you would know it when you hear it, right? That's him. Yeah, I got that sound. I know that sound. That comes from him distinctly, which I think is really cool that he has that about his playing style.
He had his own drop D sound. He owned it.
Yeah. And, songs like Spoon Man.
Great riffs.
Yeah, just, you know, killer stuff.
Outshine.
Yep, Outshine.
Every time I go to the store and I see in the freezer section, they have those Outshine popsicles. Chris Cornell's vehicle, Outshine. You know, that goes through my head, and it makes me laugh every time. So it's funny, I told my son about that, and then I played the song for him, and he gets laughing now. So when he goes, "Hey, Dad, look, he points at those popsicles."
Rusted Cage was my first song I think I heard from them, and the first time I heard Rusted Cage, I'm going to even say this, it was on Beavis and Butthead. They had a little snippet from it, right? And I was like, right. Oh man, that's a killer tune. So I wouldn't, you know, you hear little songs and you go and you check them out and see what it's like or what the band's about. And I was like, man, this is killer stuff. Sad that was the first time I heard them, but you know, at least I had the opportunity. And yeah, it definitely, I'm kind of looking forward to hearing it. It's going to be interesting with the two girl vocalists to it. So we'll see what kind of mix and mashup that super group can do. So you had some news yourself you wanted to talk about.
Yeah. So there was some hubbub, some scuttlebutt, and I'm not sure how concrete or real it is at this point, but Jason Newsted, of all people, had announced that he kind of squeaked out that there was a possible Van Halen tribute that was going to be put together. And now it wasn't known if this was a one-off tribute to Eddie Van Halen or if this was a tour in honor of that. And it was going to have David Lee Roth on vocals. Reportedly, I don't have the source, obviously, but I had heard this on, there's another show, which I really, those guys are super funny. They're a little lewd at times, but they're super funny, is that Classic Metal show. I saw it on their YouTube channel, and apparently, I actually first heard it on Eddie Trunk. So, it was a, reportedly Jason Newsted was going to be the bass player, and on drums, you'd obviously have Alex Van Halen, and you'd have Wolfgang Van Halen in there, I believe. And so it was kind of sweet, and Joe Satriani was going to be involved. You know, to be honest with you, I'd have to go read and remember. I don't remember what Wolfgang's focus, if he'd even be involved in it. I'd have to check on that, because that's one thing I'm not sure of, but... It was going to have Satriani was going to be on there, Jason Newsted on bass, Alex on drums, Roth on vocals. And then it was like David Lee Roth reportedly said, well, I would, if anyone's going to replace, like they talked about COVID, like if someone got sick, you'd have, David Lee Roth said you'd have to have multiple people to, like if someone got sick, you'd have a replacement, and Pink is the only one that could replace me on vocals. And I'm
Pink?
Like, yeah,
like
yeah.
Pink.
Like yes.
Okay.
The female vocalist, yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure I heard you right. No.
And it's not a dig on her at all. I mean, but that's, people were kind of raising their brow like, huh? You know. So, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, figuring out like double up everyone in case someone couldn't do it. But I'm thinking, you know, there's several tribute bands out there that are, can nail this stuff to a T. Like Ralph Saenz from the Atomic, I believe he was in the Atomic Punks. He can nail all the David Lee Roth stuff. I mean, and, you know, I'm sure they'd be covering, you know, some Sammy stuff as well. I mean, heck.
So, I would hope so. You know, I know that there's people that are like, you know, Sammy Hagar wasn't the original singer. They don't like it. You know, you got your two sides split, I guess.
Oh, sure. But see, I'm a fan of all vocalists that are in the band because Eddie Van Halen picked those people.
I think everyone has their own.
People need to remember that. It's different faces of his music. Essentially.
They're unique. Yeah, every one of them's unique. To me, David Lee Roth, he was more of a showman than.
Why he was in Vegas, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, if you listen to, I mean, it's not that the man can't sing. Obviously, it fit the sound and the songs they were doing. I think Hagar, coming from Montrose and being kind of the red rocker,
and his solo career, by the way.
Yes, I think his, you know, he was more about the vocals than the stage show aspect of it, as far as, you know.
Oh man, his lyrics. I mean, the guy is just incredible. He's got a whole, he even said, I remember reading in Metal Edge many moons ago that he said he's got this giant bag full of lyrics that he just pulls from when he wants to write another song. He's got this, he'll just sit there and write lyrics. And I mean, obviously David Lee Roth is a very masterful, albeit puzzling vocalist, because his lyrics are very, very random, but he puts them together. But I guess the point is that I think that, and this is not a Van Halen centric episode, although we should do one, Ben, is I am the kind of person, I take things for what they are, not what they're not. And I guess I'm just a huge Van Halen fan. I used to be a big Van Halen fan when they were actually making continuous music. It was like, wow. And some of it is like, you know, I was younger and I was discovering their back catalog, which is like, oh my gosh, this is fantastic. And I was just a kid, so I wasn't influenced by anybody. I think for myself, I always have, I always will. And I thought that they're one of the coolest bands out there, because I am one of those listeners. I listen, whether it be, regardless of the band, if I like what they're doing, I'll listen to their whole catalog, because you never know where you're going to find gems in there that you like for yourself.
Well, they develop, you know, as musicians, at least you hope they do, you know, per each album. I wouldn't expect them to put the exact same album out, because, you know, as you know, and I know, when you continue to develop and learn and play music and learn different styles and try different techniques and try to do something different, you know, it shows. And to me, it's just another point to make when you're saying about the different vocalists. I'm going to bring Gary Cherone's name up from Extreme.
I love Gary Cherone. He's a great vocalist.
What was it? Was it Van Halen 3? Was that the name of the album? I think he was.
Yeah, I have it. Yep, yeah. I'm one of the few people that actually thinks it's decent.
I was a huge Extreme fan.
Me too.
A lot of people, you know, like him, don't like him. To me, Nuno Bettencourt was almost at the same caliber as far as technique and playing style as for songwriting in the songs that they would do. So I thought when Gary Cherone stepped in, it kind of fit into the motif because, you know, Nuno's an amazing player. I would categorize him as more, you know, some of his stuff sounds more classical when he plays it, especially the solos. More classical influence. Not that Eddie didn't have that.
It's just it's a different style of melody. Let's just say that.
Yeah. So, you know, I take a look at the same thing, right? Each singer brought something different to the table. The music itself fit to the singers that they were bringing in that Eddie wrote for, you know, yes. the early 80s stuff, you know, late 70s, Van Halen to me was, you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll, you know,
but it was the hardest edged Van Halen that was ever made, especially if you listen to, Women and Children first started to go towards the end of the album, started to go into some of the heavier stuff that would be, you know, like Unchained is a pretty heavy riff. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to the end of Women and Children first, there's a riff. They used to hide just a snippet of a song at the end of it. And there's a super cool riff that's on there. I think it's tuned a full step down. And it's just incredible. It's just a snippet of maybe 10 or 15 seconds. Right.
Yeah, we should definitely do an episode on this stuff because
we got to, because I want to do the proper research, do it right.
Yeah.
But it was just, you know, if you've got like Mean Street, so is like one of my favorite riffs of all time. And I'm going to tell you something right now is when they did MTV used to do really cool live presentations on their channel back in the day, back in the late 90s. And this is post Headbangers Ball. And they did one. It was Van Halen live at the 10 spot. Right. And they were in Sydney, Australia. And they opened, they performed Mean Street on there. That is one of the most killer renditions of Mean Street I ever heard with Gary Cherone on vocals. It was insanely good. And the guitar tone was just meltdown. I mean, it was incredible. Some of the heaviest tone I've heard Eddie have in a live setting. And he had just switched over to wired guitar, you know, wired, you know, guitar chain, as opposed to the wireless stuff that he used to use prior. And he had changed, he had the PB Wolfgang guitars. He had the PB 5150 and it just was the amps are just killer. The guitar sounded great. And his signal sounded like it was ready to explode. I mean, those amps were cranked.
Well, that brings me to the next topic. I think we were going to touch on a little bit. You know, we usually talk about, you know, either parts of the guitar or things that we would change, pick, string, stuff like that. Tube Debacle. We had talked to like a little bit about it. I know that it was another topic that you kind of wanted to bring up. I personally am a huge Tube fan compared to Solid State, yes. But they're getting close, man. They're getting really close.
They'll never match it.
I don't think you can. I still like audio tape. You know, I'm a big fan of when there's you listen back to the hiss.
There's a warmth to it. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
It's analog.
Your thought on the Tube Debacle.
Tube Debacle is over with. And I'll tell you why. There was a momentary panic with tube people, but what happened was there's not enough people using tubes now that are constantly buying tubes. Unless you're Zakk Wylde or a touring or a professional outfit that's touring constantly, you're not going to be buying tubes because guys like him, they get retubes almost every – their amps retube by their techs almost every day, if not every night. They go through tubes like crazy. But how many people do you know are going to go to Guitar Center, say, hey, I need some new tubes. I just played a bar gig the night before and they're shot already. Not going to happen. Those gigs, you're not even going to crank those amps. You're not even going to have amps that are loud enough to warrant buying tubes constantly. So lack of purchasing and also lack of use because all these guys are using these Kemper profiling amps or they can steal software off the internet, off their BitTorrent. And be using like steel amp room and all this stuff, which I don't use any of that stuff, nor do I condone stealing any software. I'm a tube amp guy. I always will be a tube amp guy. I have plenty of solid state units, which you can get close, but the feel's not there. The tone can get close, but One thing you can never duplicate with a solid state unit is the sound of a Marshall Plexi cranked. Not going to happen. You don't have the push of the air from the speakers or any other tube amp for that matter. You know, it's you're just not going to do it. It's for practice in your bedroom or it's for really silent recording. But you cannot duplicate that. And, you know, and there's just not enough people buying tubes to warrant some kind of a scare. And it's already the prices have already cooled down. The whole thing lasted 3 weeks and now we're back to normal because I went and priced tubes. And I'll tell you why I priced tubes. It's because I want to retube my Marshall Plexi head. I got a 1987X 50 watt and I'm going to buy some new power tubes. Those Marshall tubes suck.
So I want JJ's. I like JJ's.
I just one last thing on this, Ben. One last thing. I went to Guitar Center today. I said, do you guys carry tubes here? Got a brand new Guitar Center that opened up in Yakima, right? I go in there. I said, do you guys carry tubes? And then one of the sales guys said, oh, no, we stopped carrying those because of the Ukraine thing, which I rolled my eyes at them. I'm like, you kidding me? And the other guy goes, oh, no, we got them. We put them back out on the floor again. So they had tubes in stock. They pulled them off the shelf but didn't get rid of them. And now, you can go back to selling tubes then. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? Give me a friggin' break.
That's going to get into a political debate.
I'm just telling you my experience. I rolled my eyes and said, okay, fine. Show me where the tubes are. And
here's my thought. Anybody, and this is my personal opinion because I'm with you, I would rather you choose tube over any kind of, you know, solid state or even any kind of plug-in that you would get for your recording device. They make it easy now, in my opinion, other than, you know, you obviously have to have the money to do it, which you even mentioned that the price of it's coming back down. You have these devices you can buy, and this is another one that we're going to talk to, like the Mesa IR. You can buy these devices. You can plug them into your tube amps. You can crank your tube amp like you would if you were playing somewhere at a big gig, but you can use these devices to bring the volume down, but you still get that sweet tone from it. So why not? Why not go and spend the money on a tube to get that sound that you want than trying to simulate it? Because you can get that really great tone and you can lower the volume with some of these devices and get what you're looking for without having to simulate it.
That's the thing, the warmth that's there. And that's the thing with – let's take an example would be the late Dimebag Darrell. He used solid-state Randall heads for a long while in the first half of his career, shall we say. And then he switched over to crank amplification, which I don't even know if they're around anymore. They might be, but they're not in all the magazines like they used to be back in the 2000s. But they're tube amps. And I remember there's an interview. If you dig into YouTube – you might be able to still find it, but he says you don't get that warmth of the solid state amps he used for a long time were okay, but he goes, you get that warmth with tubes. It's just, and I remember he was just really, really passionate about like talking about how good tubes were. And I'm like, there are so many great players out there that have done both. And I use him as an example because he used solid state amps, half full stacks, Randalls. And he just said once they approached him with tubes, he's like, you just can't get around it. And that warmth is not there if you use solid state. And the thing is that if he didn't feel that way, then crank amps could have approached him. He says, no, I just want solid state heads. If it's just an endorsement thing, then that's one thing. But I believe he was legitimate when he said that. I mean, I could tell you right now, I think a lot of people, number one, the average player, number one, if they can afford a tube amp, they're getting them more affordable, but they're a little bit honky and sound like when you get like the Marshall Origin amps. But the average player, and I was talking to my wife about this earlier today when I got back, and I said, they're making tube amps cheaper, but you get what you pay for. And like you can go get a Marshall Origin head. I think they've got a 25 watt version, I think, something like that. And I think it runs you just for the head. I think it runs you like $300 to $400. Okay. Which is not much for tube amp. And there's other companies making smaller ones like Epiphone and stuff like the, some of the ones in black, was it Blackheart amps? I don't even know if they're around anymore, but they started introducing more, I think that they used actual power tubes now, because you got to remember there's two different types, and there was some marketing things going on with Vox back in the 2000s as well with, it's a hybrid amp, so it's got solid state like a power sec, the power section solid state, the preamp section is tube driven. Some people are like, well, it's just a light bulb. I'm like, well, they made a floor unit, which had Vox made a floor unit. You remember
I have seen. In fact, I've jammed one of my other musician friends that plays guitar. He has one of those Vox ones that has the tube in it. So
it's a valve reactor series. I have a VR30. I love the amp. I think it's great.
Well, the footboard was what he was using, and I was like, first time I saw it, I'm like, hey, when are we hitting that 88 miles per hour with this? Excuse me. you can bleep that out later. We'll bleep that out. But no, it's the sound he was getting out of it was good. It's still, to me, it's exactly what you're saying. The warmth was missing from it, right? And it just, you can't replace some of the classic stuff that was, built to be used for music, to the sonic space that these things create. You just can't replicate, in my opinion. You can get close. You can get really close, but you can't duplicate it.
If you want the sound of what recorded music was like back in, say, 1978 when you had Van Halen's debut, or any other riff that was done with a tube amp, whether it be The Who or Led Zeppelin or the Rolling Stones, Kiss, Ted Nugent, whoever you want, Pink Floyd. Well, guess what, folks? Those were not recorded. Those tones, those classic albums were not recorded on solid state units. So take that to the bank.
No, that's some of the things that people listen to that, at least me growing up, and even you and other musicians that I talk to, and they're talking about, oh yeah, I listen to Boston, or, I listen to Fleetwood Mac, or I listen to this band. And a lot of the influences that people have were from, musicians that when they recorded, their sound, their style, it was on tube amps. It was on older equipment. It was on tape, right? Like I'd mentioned earlier, I like tape. I like the sound of it. I don't know if it's the hiss, the warmth to it. I think it's great for drums, and I think it's great for bass. It really, to me, helps bring that instrument out in a mix.
But it depends on what you want. It depends on what sound you want to go for. We're not throwing stones at solid state. We're just saying that there's a quality in one that doesn't exist in the other. And so, the thing is with the way a lot of the, tubes work is that I think that people, and I'm guilty of this myself, is let's say you're someone who's been around a little while and you have all these songs on CD or whatever, or cassette or whatever, and you go back and you listen to, like, take for example, Van Halen's Right Now, right? That's a great song.
It's an amazing song.
Yeah, and what? I hadn't listened to it in so long because I get busy with life, and I cranked it up, and I'm like, I felt like I heard the song all over again for the first time, and it had a different effect on me. And the thing is that my point is that I think if you really want to, have a debate about tube versus solid state, go back and listen to those original songs and refamiliarize yourself with the sound quality of the amps and the guitars interacting, right? To refamiliarize yourself with that tube saturation, because what they would do is they'd crank up the amp in one room and the speakers would be in a separate room, to get that crank sound, right? Because these guys were in rooms that were set up for the most part. Like, nowadays it's different now because you can get a smaller amp for studio recording. And in the 70s, they didn't have stuff like that. So they had to go crank them up, with these huge double stacks. And now, now you're getting into IRs, which are called impulse response. You got software that's like an IR, and it'll take a line out from the amp and transform it into a mic'd tone, right? And you've got all these different things, and it's like I'm in line to get one of the Mesa Boogie's got the amp clone IR Plus, and it's got a speaker attenuator, an attenuator, so you can crank up a tube amp at low volumes, right? And, you know, the thing is that technology is changing. And so with all of this being said, I think number one, people need to refamiliarize themselves with the sounds of the original recordings. And, you know, just keep in mind that a lot of people have gone to like Kemper profiling amps and software, actual virtual instruments, plugins, instead of even buying tube amps. And for a while there, I was getting a little nervous because I'm like, if all the younger players coming along are starting to use this software or, you know, these Kemper amps and all that stuff, it's like, what does that mean for tube amps? Now, same can be said about cars. How many people really care about gas guzzling cars versus a Tesla that can turn into a brick when the battery and the computer decide to die on? You can't even roll the thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, to me, that's almost like exactly what you said. You know, are you going to use a gas car you can fill up in 5 minutes and you can go 300 miles and then fill up in 5 minutes and keep going? Or do you want to get a car that goes 200 miles? You have to sit and wait for it to charge for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Just to go another 200 miles.
And who's got the time for that? Nobody.
Well, and think of it this way. Okay. There's no infrastructure to handle that, for one. You imagine how many cars are going to be on there on the road, how many people are going to be waiting for a charging station. So you're going to wait even longer than an hour for your car to charge just to get to a spot in order to get it plugged in to begin with.
Right.
Anyway, different topic.
But it's a similar conundrum, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that people don't think about. And so the thing is, on the guitar side of things, on the amp side of things, you know, I don't have to try. What happens? Oh, my MIDI presets are gone. And this, you know, all my stuff got lost. Well, guess what? If I got a tube amp, I don't need MIDI presets. I've got knobs. I have pedals. I can write down the settings on a piece of paper that will never short circuit on me. And
take a picture. You know,
take a picture. Your phone up,
take a picture. I do that. You know, I can't say that I haven't ever messed with my mix before. You know, I mean, that's half of coming up with different sounds and cool things and different, you know, different tones with your guitar, your instrument, or whatever it is. It's like changing strings. You know, you tweak it, find what you like. If you don't, go back to the setting you had before, right?
Exactly. So that's the thing is, I think technological advancements are great, but they're not there yet. Just like cars are not there yet. These profile amps are not there yet as far as emulating a tube amp.
They're close, but they're not, they're just not the same.
I think they'll get to like 90, it'll get to the point to where the casual player is not even going to know a difference. But for me, having played both, I definitely know the difference. And it's not a St. John's wort thing where, well, I know I took it, so I'm in a better mood now. Right?
It's a placebo.
I was just going to say, you know,
it's a placebo. So in this case, it's an expensive placebo, but, you know, hey, to each their own, you know,
but anyway,
I'm not going to say I wouldn't use a solid state. I would, you know what, if there's a sound out of it that I would add to the mix, because heck, you know, use multiple different types of amps for your guitar sound.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Yeah.
And, I mean, lots of bands do that. Tool does that. That's why you can't ever usually emulate their sound, because he's got three or four different amps in the studio that he's using to get the sound he wants, right? And that'll go into the main topic we want to talk about, music producers, engineers, and stuff. But having said that, yeah, use different stuff, get different sounds. That, to me, I think modern music doesn't do that anymore. Other than bands that know how to do that, and they get the engineers and producers to help them out, you know, like, hey, try this out. Try this guitar with this amp. Try these three amps with the same guitar. Let's see what we can create with that sound, with what you're trying to do. And, you know, going into that radio forced fed stuff that's on the, you know, the air these days, you're missing a lot of that flavor. You're missing the mix, right? Bringing up that song that you did. Right now, piano, guitar, bass, drums, vocals, each instrument stands out in that song, and it is just a powerful piece of music.
They were a unit. They were a unit as a band.
Well, even just the instruments, the mixing, the producing, the band, the song, the way it was written, the way it was played, the instruments used, the amps used, the microphones angled at just the right spot and mixed how it was. You know, it's magic. You can call it lightning in a bottle if you want to call it that. You know, and when you can capture those moments, those are awesome. And when you're in a good band, you can hopefully get the opportunity to create that on many a song because you become that tight-knit group, like you just mentioned. You know, they were solid as a group.
I got that song playing through my head right now. No pun intended.
Right now.
I'm not joking. It's playing the whole verse section is playing through my head right now. I missed that. You're making me sad now, Ben.
Oh, don't be sad. It'll come back. I think there's enough information out there right now. There's enough people in the business still that information is out there for people to absorb, to take in and challenge themselves to become better. People like Rick Beato, I think he has amazing videos. He has amazing information. There's people out there that understand it at a level that people used to and should now. I'm hoping, you know, keep passing the torch like we're kind of doing. We're talking about this stuff. Hopefully people that listen to it will be challenged to go out and seek some of these things.
I'll say I'm passing the torch when I'm 60. I always go.
Start rolling that stuff into, you know, to what they're doing and what they're trying to record, you know, like we're talking about. Use different amps, change some of the settings.
That's why we kind of do this. That's why we do this podcast.
Yeah. Engineers and mixers, they do not get enough credit for what they do. Most bands will go in, you know, minus the ones that are, you know, junkies like Eddie Van Halen was awesome.
Oh man. Yeah.
But most musicians will go in, they play their instrument, they're told to plug in, and they have an engineer, they have a producer and a mixer that are sitting in a room with them. They play their instrument and they have somebody go, play it again. Let me capture it again. Let me get another take of this. Let me try this, right? And that engineer and the mixers, all that work that they're doing on the back end to make that song as good as it can, they're tweaking those things, right? They're using the microphones. They're gauging the distance of how far away from the amp that they want to set it to get the sound that they're looking for when they're creating it. And there's some amazing, amazing engineers out there that I think people aren't aware that they are half the reason that that music sounds as good as it does. One name, you know, Bob Rock, a lot of people knew him. But before Motley Crue's Dr. Feelgood came out, how many people were really, really aware of him, right? Then he went on to produce and mix Metallica's albums after that. And, you know, just getting involved in the music industry, a lot of people don't probably know who Jim Barton is. He's one of my favorite engineers and mixers and producer. He did Operation Mindcrime. He's worked with Rush on Power Windows. He's worked with Aerosmith, Eric Clapton, David Bowie, Kiss, Metallica, Motley Crue. He's worked with a slew of people. He's just not one of those names that, you know, when you say, oh yeah, this engineer or mixer comes up when you mention a band or you mention an album, right? Terry Date, worked with Dream Theater, Soundgarden, Deftones, Staind, Limp Bizkit. Even if you don't like the band itself, I challenge people to go out and listen to some of these, the albums that were created from these bands, and listen to how it's mixed, how it was produced and engineered. Because some of these are just a masterpiece, how they mixed the different instruments together. Coming from the from a person that does their own mixing and recording with the instruments, trying to get certain sounds to not just cancel each other out, and you can bring like the guitars above the bass, and then you can bring the bass out when you're trying to mix it with a kick drum. It's talent, and it takes time and it takes effort. I don't know if
It takes vision for what you want it to sound like too. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
And these producers, mixers, sound engineers, they all have their signature preference about how they want it to sound. That's why a specific name is hired, and you know, they have a body of work like you said, that you just listed off a bunch of stuff that Jim Barton did. And that's because he has a track record. And so when you have that, you are being hired to bring those qualities into any band that hires you. And if that's not what they want, then they shouldn't have hired you, right? Because you always have like, well, we didn't like this guy, so we canned him. What would you hire him in the first place for unless you're totally ignorant as to what his body of work was like? It's not because the producer's bad. It's because you hired the wrong person.
Yeah, it's not their absolutely. Fault.
You know, I mean, so I remember that you bring to mind this episode of Vince Neil was on this show in like 2004. He was on a show called Extreme Makeover, and he wanted to sing a power ballad, and because he wanted to go on tour, so they made him drop a bunch of weight and stuff. And he worked with Desmond Child as a producer to record this song, and it was fantastic because he's like, nope, do it again. Nope, do it again. He probably did 20 takes of just the opening vocal of this song. And I remember Desmond Child was saying, he said, we're the guys that nobody ever sees. We're the people that make this stuff sound good. And he goes, if I'm involved, I'm paraphrasing here because it's been a while since I watched it. But he says, I watched it when it originally aired. He goes, you know, if you're going to work with me, you're going to do it right. And because I think Vince Neil was a little rusty on the vocals, and you know how it is now. No one has to sing and be a singer anymore. They can use auto tune. What I thought was great, this guy did not do that. Well, I mean, and this was even after Cher came out with her song using auto tune.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. We've had an episode on this already.
I'm thinking of the Lost movie of Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
Remember they were singing that? Because they had that thing and changed their voice. It's so stupid.
Stop, man.
I'm sorry. Okay. Leonard Nimoy was that evil alien. Anyway, sorry. But my point is that he made him sing the vocal over and over. And guess what? He brought the best vocal performance possible out of Vince Neil on that episode. He's like, nope, start over. Nope, start over. Again. You know, and he kept doing it to get it right. I mean, it was a long session for one song. They had him in the booth. He had the headphones on, you know, had the really nice high dollar ribbon mic in there and everything, and tube mic, whatever. And it was fantastic. He finally got him to start singing right, you know, and not be lazy about it, and got him to sing into pitch. Because you have to harmonize, you know, and
they have an ear for that stuff, right? And they're hired to do a job. Yes, the band looks to, you know, hire the engineer and the mixers to do the work. But I think the music that stands out the most is the one where they do get challenged, where they do get pushed as musicians to perform better, to continually try to hone in on the perfect take and to, you know, capture that on a recording. I think that's part of what their job is, you know, so that you hear on occasion and you know, some kind of monster from Metallica where they went behind the scenes and you see kind of the process that some of these people did with Bob Rock and the arguments they would get into to things with him.
I would not personally argue with Bob Rock because he knows what he's doing.
Well, I would want to be challenged. I would want to be able to express my thoughts, but at the same time, I want to be open-minded enough to trying new things, right?
Well, his job is to make a producer's job is to make the band sound as good as it can on that recording. So let him do his job. Right. Now, if he starts, you know, and you know, producers generally will have a offer suggestions even in the songwriting process. Like you might want to change this a little here for whatever reason. I mean, I'm really using broad strokes here, but you know. Sometimes they might offer a little bit of suggestion, like, why don't we just tighten this up a smidge because this section's a little too long. If we could do this and get it more succinct, it's going to help the overall sound. I mean, that's all part of their job.
Right.
And who knows what kind of substances are involved and how much alcohol is involved that would drive tempers. I mean, I'm a dry guy, you know, so I'd be like, all right, I'd be pretty clear-headed. You know, when if a producer would be telling me, hey, let's try this and try that, I would understand coherently what he's saying. And so it's a little different for me. But I could see where, you know, you spend long hours, you know, trying to get an album done, you know, however long it takes. Depends on if you're doing an EP, doing a full length, whatever, you know, and it's there's a lot of factors involved. Maybe the producer's a complete dink, you know, and then you got to say, well, this guy's a jerk, but I know it's for the greater good, and I know I'm going to have a good product, and you just deal with it. It just depends, you know.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said that you're hiring them for a specific sound that they can bring, right, or a certain style that they're bringing. There's Deftones' Around the Fur. The song itself starts out with this just amazing drum beat, right? And the way that it was recorded, the way it sounds, and the way it was mixed, I'm like, man, this guy is – he knows what he's freaking doing with that drum mix, right? Or maybe there's a guy that knows how to bring out the bass parts more. Or maybe the mix, you know, is more guitar-centric, you know, just depending on what you're looking for and what you're trying to achieve for the overall sound of the album, like you're saying.
Yeah, and I'd like to start listing off here in a second some of the producers that stand out for me as far as metal is concerned. And some of the albums that I've heard, I'm not sure who the producer is, but there's a recent Udo Dirkschneider, lead singer, he was a singer of Accept at one time. You know, Balls to the Wall. Metal guys know that song. That's a heavy riff. That's one of the most bone-crushing riffs I've ever heard. And I don't think anyone could disagree with me on that. And I'm not talking about thrash metal where you got the double, you got the Iron Cobras. I'm not talking about that stuff. I'm talking about metal, okay? Like more slower tempo, but heavy hitting. You know, there's no double bass or any of that stuff. It's more of a, I guess, if you want to call it a classic metal, but I like that stuff. And so, you know, that genre and that particular time frame is great, but I think his album came out in 2018 and I just started listening to it within the last week. And Udo's got some great stuff. It's called Steel Factory. Okay, and it's like just amazing. And I was like, came out on AFM Records, and it's just incredible. I mean, the guitars and the production of it is just incredible. He's had the same bass player for a while. His bass player is amazing, and his guitar player has, at one point he had two guitar players. He did a live album. Was it Live in Sofia, I think? And he had two dual guitars, which was really neat. But, you know, I mean, a lot of people think an album like this is non-essential, but it's like, I disagree with that. I think it's become a modern classic for metal, and it's because he knows what he's doing, and there's some excellent guitar solos. But his vocals never really, if anything, they've just changed as far as the tonality. And if you ever hear some of his stuff, you'll definitely recognize it, you know, and you'll recognize the vocals. And it's just, it's great that guys like him are still carrying the torch as far as I'm concerned. And it's a kind of metal that goes really good with an orchestra, a string orchestra. And I just think it's fantastic. And I mean, probably on the other side of things, maybe on the U.S. side, I tend to take my – I notice that certain countries, the sound is different because they bring in different producers. And there's actually like a style difference, even if you say German metal versus, you know, say like a metal band from England, or you have a producer from England, I should say, or maybe one from the States in that same bracket of time, right?
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and I think that's awesome. And I think that just overall, the producer's role really shapes the sound of the band for that album, at least. And because you always hear like, oh, we got Bob Ezrin, you know, David Gilmour's working with Bob Ezrin. You know, it's like if you listen to the Pulse album that Pink Floyd put out, you know, Bob Ezrin wrote some of the tracks, co-wrote some of the tracks. And, you know, the producers actually have a songwriting role because it's going to add to the overall feel of the album. And so those are some rare cases where you've got a producer that's so talented the band actually, you know, lets them put songs on the album, or maybe it's in the contract, I don't know. But
well, no, I think you cool. bring up a good point. A Perfect Circle, Billy Howardell started out being a guitar tech for Tool, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, started recording stuff that was for what he was starting out doing was supposed to be for movie scores and movie soundtracks, right? And he got to write his own stuff, produce it, and kind of mix it and kind of had his own vision on it. And I think that's, to me, what also makes A Perfect Circle's music stand out a bit to me, because I think he had this overall, you know, mixer, engineer, producer, writer, recording kind of mentality all the way through each of the albums that they've put out and what they've recorded. And you can tell, you know, it's good quality and the music still hits you. And I think he's got talent, you know, not just writing the music, but definitely doing the recording aspect of it too, and the mixing and where he wants things to be. And I guess if you want to call it designing the song, or, you know, you can write it in chunks, but then, you know, as you and I have done when we've written some of our tracks, we're like, well, hey, what if we move this piece here, right? What does this sound like? Or maybe this would be better being a chorus instead of a verse. I think Billy definitely has a really good knack for being able to do that. And I think that role of that engineer is to challenge some of those thoughts, because I still bounce things off of you, and I've got, I think, like 3 songs in the hopper. They're close to being done, and I need to finish them up. But bouncing them off of somebody else helps me kind of get a different perspective on it. I'm not as talented as some of those people that can go in like that and have it completely laid out in their mind. So when I'm writing it, it takes me longer, because I am putting on all those hats and I haven't mastered every single one of them. But yeah, they definitely deserve a lot of respect for what they're bringing to the table and making, in my opinion, the bands be as good as they can be, like you had mentioned, for sure. If I could hire an engineer to sit in my house whenever I felt like, hey, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, get up, dude. I want to go record. Let's make this happen. You know, I totally would, but I don't have that luxury right now. So,
well, that's reality for most people these days. I mean, if you watch the movie Anvil, the Story of Anvil, they didn't have the money for a producer. And they got, you know, Steve Lips Kudlow. He got the money from his sister, you know, gave him some of the money that he needed to actually get that produced professionally, because it was Yngwie Malmsteen's producer that worked on it's Chris, and I'm going to say his name wrong. It's an interesting name, but he's a well-known metal, rock metal producer, and it's, find it right here, but it's, let me find the album, but it's not cheap. It's that, my point is, it's not cheap, and sometimes you have to, you know, people had to raise money the old way. They weren't doing Kickstarters. You know, it was like you had to go work a job, or you had to sell something, some of your property, to finance these things. You weren't out panhandling for money. You had to give something of yourself to make these records happen. And, you know, and there's nothing wrong with the Kickstarters or any of that stuff. I'm just saying that they had a harder time trying to raise money for these things. You know, they had to ask family members, or they had to sell their car. Joe Satriani, in order to get his first album finished, he had to, he applied for a credit card, maxed out the credit card, you know, and he had no money left. And he's like, it's a good thing that album took off, because he didn't have any money. How was he going to pay the credit card? So, you know, he had to use a credit card to, you know, he worked with John Cunaberti on that album, longtime, you know, collaborator, and they got the album done. But it was like, he was taking a risk.
Well, there's some people out there that I think, at least I've seen in the viewing comments on Twitter and just kind of looking up some of the people that are still in the industry that I look up to, or that I think are very talented people. Derek Shrinian, you know, he's out there willing to play on people. He's willing to, you know, play on people's records, and, you know, it's not free, which is fine, you know, no. But you're gonna get the talent, and you're gonna get the people that have been in the industry and in the business long enough to kind of work with you and give you input and advice, right? Which is, it's great to me. That's the kind of stuff that, you know, will kind of enhance you, push you, if you're open to it. Kind of like I mentioned before, if you work with people that you know, have been successful, or even if they haven't been successful, if they're bringing a different style or something that they want to try you and challenge you on, you never know. You know, part of music is being creative and being open to trying new things and doing new things. So why not? If you can, if not, you know, find the people that you can in the area that you live in, or the people that you talk to, or, you know, there's Reverb Nation, tons of people out there. Heck, you know, if you know anybody that wants to, you know, shoot the breeze with Justin or me, you know, I'm totally willing to talk to anybody and work with anybody, you know, musically, and try to help people out where I can. So,
yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, when you were mentioning that stuff, it kind of reminded me how there's all kinds of strange ways you can get, like, you can hire, what is that service? You can hire musicians to play on your album. It's like an Uber thing. What do they call that thing where you can hire?
I don't think I've heard of this.
Is it Fiverr? Is that the name of it?
There's a service. You're going to make me look it up. All right. All right. I'm looking it up. He says called Fiverr, like F-I-V-E-R.
I think so. I could be F-I-V-E-R, but I could be totally wrong. It's probably some kind of smut app for your phone or something. I don't know.
Yeah, watch. I'm going to get some, like,
sorry if you, on if my it, computer. If it's strange, sorry.
Dang it, Justin. No, Talented Freelancers, F-I-V-E-R.
Okay, so I was right. It was at the edge of my memory.
Yep, there's two R's.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's services out there like that. You can hire the studio musicians to play your stuff. And I've never used it, probably never will, but I want the greats to play on my stuff. And oh, man, I know that sounds very, what's that?
They do everything. Logos, WordPress, voiceovers, videos.
Sure. There's some great services out there. That's what you want to do.
Yeah.
But my goal is I'd like to be able to play, have to work with people that I grew up listening to, that I know would give me the quality that I need. And if I'm going to make a step like that, if I want to make a strong statement, I know that working with these people, that the songs would be great, because a lot of these people, even as a producer or a musician, they're not going to want to work on your stuff if they don't think it's any good. And you know,
they'll tell you.
Exactly. You'll know darn quick that you got to go back and polish things up. They'll let you know darn fast where you are in your walk as a musician. And that's one of the great things about hiring a producer to do your stuff, because if you try to self-produce it yourself, you know, and you got an ear for it, that's great. And you have great results. Awesome. But I still think that anyone can benefit hiring a producer because they have the experience. That's what they do. And as much as I'd like to be a jack of all trades, I will always wonder if someone else produced it for me, if it would sound better. And who wants to keep re-recording your tracks over and over? I certainly don't. I want to play the album. I want to get it recorded, get it done, get it pressed, or get it sent out for distribution and move on. And, you know, I don't like to repeat myself 15 times. So I would rather work with someone and say, hey, look, this is how this song, you haven't listened to it, this is how the song I think is going to work best. Let's try this. Let's use this guitar. Let's put these mics here and try it. And you could, you know, I think you need to not have an ego with anything. And I think when you're working with someone else like this and you're paying them, I think it's a good opportunity to check that ego at the door. Let them have the ego. That's what they do. That's my opinion, though. And it's in your best interest to give them some latitude. But I think, you know, I mean, nowadays there's people that will send tracks and you don't even work in the same room with them. They say, they send it back. So what do you think of this? Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, there's a lot of people doing that too. Like, we just talked about that Fiverr thing, you know, and it's like, I don't know, I guess I'm rambling here, but I think you should give them the latitude they need as producers, because then they'll get ticked off. Then you got to go find someone else, and you're not getting your work done, like your album or whatever. And then you get discouraged. It's on and on and on. You're on TV for the wrong reasons. You know, smash a guitar against the house made of fracas. I don't know. But at any rate, producers, I think, are very important. And I think there's a lot of younger players out there that don't value that. And And it's so easy to like, well, I can write a song. I can just get this program, and next thing you know, the program's doing all the work for them. It's not art. It's not art anymore. It's, oh, this sounds cool, so I'll just put this here. Well, that's like, you know, I think you just got to be careful. I mean, like, I got this Windows or the Logic Pro 10, you know, and it's got a lot of cool stuff in there. And next thing I know, I'm writing a movie soundtrack when really I want to showcase guitar playing. Now, I was just totally blown away the fact that I was having these orchestrations in there and all these cool things. And it sounds phenomenal for someone who wants an overall package soundtrack, right? But if you want it to be a guitar-centric album and 4K, and showcase, excuse me, playing, you got to be careful with that stuff because it's going to get away from you. And a producer can help you say, no, I think for what you want to do, you're getting a little off the rails here. You got to keep vision of what you want for that album. What do you want to do? And I don't think, what do you have to say? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's how you build a listener base, because they want to know your story.
And you, most albums, I don't know if people probably do know this, so I'm probably repeating what they do know, but each album that gets put out, you know, there's like four or five other songs that didn't make the cut for that album, right? Because it didn't fit the overall concept or sound or flow of what message and what you're trying to put out. So I completely agree with you when you make comments like, hey, you know, listen to those people, because they have the overall picture in mind, right?
Where, yeah, right,
you're focusing on the writing aspect of it. I need to write these riffs. I'm trying to write these songs. You're paying for someone else to deal with the outside stuff beyond that you're not having to focus on and concentrate on, because that takes a lot of time, a lot of thought process on its own. You know, which, like I mentioned earlier, you know, having songs in the hopper is great, but, you know, sitting down and trying to do all that work is what takes me forever just to put one song out.
Right.
And people are like, well, hey, when are you going to put another song out? I'm like, I'm working on it, but I don't want it to sound like crap either. Right.
Well, it's easy for them. They're not the one doing the work or having to pay for it.
It's, or giving up all their spare time.
Exactly. You're doing the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
As with any other content, right? If you've got YouTube videos you make, or you're telling stories or whatever, they love your result, but they don't recognize the work it takes or appreciate it. They just want what they want. And
sure.
You know, that's the way people are. They're consumers. And
yeah. Well, the channels that I watch, you know, I know that those people, you know, they don't just record something and then throw it out there and all of a sudden it's done and it's packaged and put out and it's all nice and neat. And, you know, they're on YouTube with their entry video or their title that comes across the screen. All that takes time, you know, to cut and edit, you know.
There's some people that just think you just flick a button.
Well, there's probably some websites you just upload it to and they're like, hey, you just do this for me. Right. You pay $20, boom, you got yourself some nice little package that someone else put together for you.
There's no artistry there.
It's an interesting era, which we can, you know, that's just like another topic for a different podcast, which
absolutely. I will park that. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. I mean, I think about things like when you're talking about being your own producer and doing your own stuff and entrepreneurs about making money. Justin Bieber made it big off of YouTube. Right. Well, if you put enough videos out, you make enough money, and then you can throw that money back in and snowball it and just keep going and going off all the views and listeners that are out there for that type of stuff, right? Hate him, like him, different debate, different topic, that's fine. But yeah, there's so many different ways, there's shortcuts, there's things that people didn't have the opportunity to do in an era of music that I look up to, that I listen to, kind of coming full circle. With the instruments, the people that have the knowledge, the ability to package all of that together and make what they did. It's just, it's an amazing thing. It's part of the reason I love music so much. So I know you're like, this is a public service announcement from Ben Stape. Thank you.
No, I'm laughing about the editing I'm going to do.
I've got more I got to do this weekend,
hey,
too.
Hey, I got to edit some of my stuff, and I got to edit yours, so, you know. But I want to have that nice package you were talking about. I want the preferred package, Ben. Preferred package!
I'll take the premium, please, for $20. Thank
what
you.
What is that for the what is that for the Supreme Oil Change? What's that run me?
Yeah. You know. Does it come with the HVAC clean out? Ah, man.
Yeah, they change the cabin oil filter that you don't even have in your car. Wasn't designed with one.
Yeah, that's going to be an extra $50 for that, man. Just to take the cover off.
Just a sidebar random thing. I went to I had to happen to me once, and they were going to charge me for a cabin air filter replacement, and I won't say what establishment it was. And the manager caught the guy saying that, and he says, let's double check that, right? He comes back when I go to pick up the car, and the manager says, yeah, we are going to charge you for the cabin air filter replacement. It turns out your car doesn't have one. So he caught this guy, going to ring me up for that. And he says, you can't do that. So someone was on my side that day.
Sometimes you get lucky, you know, absolutely.
May fortune favor the foolish. That's what I say.
Oh, that's the other one I like to say is every once in a while, a blind squirrel gets a nut. Yeah, it's good.
What the frick?
funny. Okay, well, I think that kind of wraps up our show for today. Give some shout outs to the people that, you know, have constantly supported us and hopefully some new listeners here. Shoot us messages. Let us know what you guys want us to talk about, what you'd want to hear about. We're open to even just dialogue. If you want to talk to us about helping you out musically, you can give us, just a message out on Twitter and let us know. Other podcasts you definitely want to check out. We hope this finds you well. I like listening to those guys. They're awesome. Chuck, my hero buddy. McSauce, you guys are awesome too. I know I say this every time. Paul, you know what I'm going to say. In fact, I'm not going to say it because you already know what I'm going to say. So let's get it up there, buddy. And then Fireside Chat, I think, is another one that is definitely worth checking out.
Ryan McCormick is hilarious.
Ryan's cool. I like Ryan.
Yeah, and we have a list of people we'd like to have a be guest on the show. He's definitely a good one because he is a listener of fine music. And as are some of the other folks that we just mentioned, Paul, we know where Paul stands. And we know where Chuck stands.
Absolutely.
So you're the producer now? You're going to decide when this podcast episode is over? Is that how it's going to go, huh?
Well, you know, you paid me the $20, so...
You're not supposed to say that.
I showed up. We're good, right? That's half the battle. We're good.
Next time I'll hire Fiverr. How's that sound?
You wounded me deeply here. Can we take this offline? Okay, this isn't cool. Now we're doing that whole thing on in front of people.
This is awkward, Ben. Anyway, yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks, guys, for... clicking on this and giving it a listen. And just remember, you know, if you love us, tell a friend. If you don't love us, tell an enemy, because we'll still be here tomorrow.
Yeah, we're not going to stop. We love doing what we do. Hopefully you guys find this interesting, to the people that are just now listening or giving us a chance. We appreciate it. We love music and we like talking about it. So we're going to keep rolling.
Excellent. All right, guys, that's going to wrap it up. And, be safe out there. Peace.
See ya.